Welcome to Full and Share Theology. We're your hosts, Justin Mercier and Bruce Pagano, and this is Theology for Everyone. Well, hey, welcome back to Full and Share Theology. We're your hosts, Justin Mercier and Bruce Pagano.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, and then today we are talking about theology. Isn't that what we talked about already?
Yep. I mean, from a practical standpoint, or from a theoretical standpoint, we are talking about theology, and we try and bring it down to a place. What's our tagline? Like, theology for everyone.
Yeah.
So we try and bring it down to a place where it's understandable and applicable and able to be practiced by everyone.
Yeah.
But I just got back from, well, not just a week ago, I went to something called Theology Bear Camp. That is, there's a guy by the name of Trip Fuller, and he's got a podcast called Homebrewed Christianity, and he's an academic. So he's Dr. Trip Fuller, and super jealous of him. He got his PhD from Edinburgh, the University of Edinburgh, which is
that right?
Where I would love to go. And he held a conference of sorts called Theology Bear Camp. And so it was like his little kind of pitch to it was like, you know, one of three people are going to show up here. It's like the real, like, nerdy academic, you know, they're going to nerd out over all of these theologians here and the podcasts, and or the, like, person who's looking for community in a deconstruction type space, or person that doesn't care about either one of those and just wants to day drink at a church. So
yeah, right.
Then I kind of fell into all three of those categories to some degree. So, but it was super cool. And one of the things they talked about was, it's called Theology Beer Camp, but the whole thing was the overarching theme was experiencing God. And a couple of sessions I went to, they talked about, the speakers talked about bad theology. And so I kind of wanted to talk about practical theology and what that means, and bad theology versus good theology, and how, you know, and so, and some examples of what we see as bad theology versus good theology. So
was there people all over the country at this place?
Yeah, there was a dude from New Zealand there.
Wow.
So yeah. But yeah, I met people from all over the country. I mean, apart from New Zealand, I met somebody from San Francisco, so they were, you know, they were farther west than us, and met people from the Pennsylvania area, you know, the Tri-Cities area, or Tri-State area, and met people from Louisiana, and people from Kentucky, and people, so they were all over the place. Yep. One of the theologians that was there and did a panel discussion, kind of the name of Dr. Thomas Ord, actually lives in our area. So got to, I knew about him, and I knew he lived in this area. I thought he still lived in this area. I didn't think that he got, that he'd left. But I had to go all the way to North Carolina to meet him. So
is that right? Where does he live? In Nampa?
Yeah. Yeah. Down the street from me.
No way.
Several blocks down.
Midland. Is that is that kind of something where you're now you have a relationship where you guys can go out to coffee and
yeah,
stuff?
He was, he told me where he writes. He was most mornings you can find me writing at this coffee shop, and he's you can show up there if you want to, and shoot me an email. And he still is a ordained elder at one of the local Nazarene churches, and was I'm getting ready to kick off a series. He's I don't preach all the time, but I'm getting ready to preach through this series. If you want to come, shoot me an email. I'll let you know when I'm starting it and when I'm preaching. I was cool. So
that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Super cool. So, So yeah, that's what I want to talk about.
Oh, that's awesome. Now, when you went to beer camp, first of all, was there a limit of beers you could have?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. They would bring it out like at, lunchtime. And then from lunchtime on, you could drink. Like the only limit was how quickly the beer keg emptied. So they even
Got
catered
it.
lunch for us on Saturday. Was it Saturday? Yeah, on Saturday they catered lunch for us from a local barbecue place. So they brought their like food truck in and gave us lunch. It was super cool.
That's cool. Did anybody get a little too crazy at beer camp?
That's subjective. The first night, I'll tell you what, I was exhausted. So I wish I'd have stayed, but I didn't stay around for it. But the first night they had karaoke, like
Oh.
they said drunk karaoke, but so probably there were some people that maybe had a little too much to drink, but like I was driving, I had to drive back
Yeah.
to Durham every night. So but like they sang 90s hits in a church in karaoke, like the song that actually kicked it off, our friend Tim Whitaker and another guy named Morgan and Trip all sang Jesus Freak because they had lost a bet and they were like, okay, we get to pick the first song, and the people picked Jesus Freak, so they're up there singing Jesus Freak to kick off
Yeah.
drunk karaoke.
Dude, cool. That's
It
awesome.
was
Yeah.
fun. It was a blast. Like I loved it, and I got to meet some awesome people, some really great people.
Yeah.
And like I'm still processing some stuff and just like stuff that I can't say online because people will be like, ah, and get mad at me.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean I won't eventually. I just want to know kind of what I think and talk through it with some people before I open my big fat mouth.
Yeah, no, I'm curious to know what those topics are because that would be really, really fun to hear.
Yeah, when we get off, when I stop recording and there's no
Yeah.
evidence of me ever saying it, I'll share
Cool.
some stuff with you.
Yeah, sounds good. Now, and so you slept in a hotel? Is that what most people did?
Yeah. Some of the guys got like Airbnbs and like shared them and stuff. I just like, so we have a Costco card and there's a like account, like
Yeah.
a Costco travel site. And so I just bought a package. It's funny too, because like marijuana is not legal in North Carolina, but it's decriminalized. And like I roll up to this candle in Candlewood Suites
Yeah.
in Durham. And it's very clear smell of marijuana like throughout the whole. And I walk in and they didn't realize Candlewood Suites is like an extended stay. So like I walk in, there's like a mini
Right.
kitchen, like a kitchen area with a full fridge, and I was like, ah, oh, damn, that means that there's no breakfast. So I went out there, I was like, is there breakfast? And they were like, no, you have a kitchen in here. I was just like, dang
Yeah, right.
it.
Yeah.
So I didn't know that, but it was nice. It was nice enough. I mean, like, little lower end, probably like a 2, 2.5 star hotel.
Right.
Like you'd get on the elevator and there'd be like a container of ranch dip that someone had gotten and dropped and just left it in the
No.
elevator. And you
Yeah.
go up and tell this, kid, I say kid, but this like 20-year-old working the front desk and, 5 o'clock in the morning. Hey man, someone dropped ranch dressing in the, and he's just like, gosh dang it, man. I was like, no, I'm sorry, dude. It
He's
wasn't
like the
me.
third time this
Yeah.
week.
Yeah. Like, it, yeah, he was no stranger to people leaving messes in the elevator.
That's funny.
So, but it was nice. Like the package was like airfare, hotel, and a rental car. And so,
That's cool. You know, that's the thing is like you, yeah, I like, I like the traditional Holiday Inn, Marriott, like Hyatt, that sort of thing. But this last time we stayed at a La Quinta.
I like La Quinta.
I for whatever reason I was just thought like when we traveled when I was younger we would go to La Quinta's and they weren't great like they weren't like great right
Right.
hotels. The one here in Twin though it was awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
My son works for Hilton, And so usually I stay at Hilton because I get a like a family discount. But like the package was cheaper than buying everything separate on my Costco account. So I just did that.
Yeah.
In hindsight, I would have stayed in Chapel Hill. Like I would have found an Airbnb in Chapel Hill that was walking distance, but no big deal. It was funny either way.
Yeah. Yeah. Is this something that Tim put on himself or was it something else?
No, it was Trip Fuller.
Trip put
Tim
it on.
Was just one of the, so they invited, it was Theology Bear Camp God Pod edition. So they invited a whole bunch of like theology podcasts and they interviewed, they like did interview discussions with the theologians who were there as speakers. So like all the keynote speakers were like theologians and like PhDs and pastors and, you know, people who had like worked in their field researching and whatever for a long time. And the podcast hosts interviewed them on like panel discussions and stuff like that. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Is this their first year doing it or?
No, this is like, I don't know, the 7th or 8th beer camp. This is, I think, the first time that they've done podcast guys showing up.
Yeah. Did you get a chance to talk about us at all? Like, was there a space for that?
For what?
About this podcast?
No, I mean, I talked with other people, like, but like there wasn't like a public forum to be able to have that discussion, though.
Yeah.
So, like, I would mention to people, oh, yeah. And, you know, they'd be like, I got a podcast. Yeah, I got a podcast too. So. But I'm, you know, like I got a chance to talk with, like, I don't know if you listen to like You Have Permission or with Dan Koch, A Tiny Revolution. I think Tim was there, obviously, the New Evangelicals, the Christian Humanist podcast. There's a couple other ones, some that Crackers and Grape Juice, like those podcasts were there, but they're all like connected to Trip. Like they're all within the same realm with each other. You know what I'm saying? Like they occupy the same space.
Oh, I see. So, yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh, cool. It looks like a lot of fun. Are you going to go again?
Oh, maybe. It just depends on like when it is and where it is and. But yeah, it was a blast.
This is just doing an Idaho version of it.
Yeah, right.
They'd be like, Idaho.
Pick a church and drink in it.
Right. Yeah, I'm sure you could find one.
But they had a local brewery that supplied all the beer on Friday night. I think it was Friday night or Saturday night. One of the nights, Saturday night. Maybe they had like a beer exchange. So like people brought beer from their local area and just set it out and you could like do beer tastings. I had the first sour that I've ever liked, cause I don't like sours, but there was this key lime pie one that was just tasted like key lime pie. Like I was like, this is solid.
Really?
So yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So it was good. It was fun. It was worth it. Like at the end of the day, like, they probably gave us more beer and like I got a stack of books.
Oh, really?
Like I only bought two of these, but they gave us all the rest.
Jeez.
So like, you know, I walked away with, I bought Bad Theology Kills by Kevin Garcia and I bought Healing Our Broken Humanity by Grace G. Sun Kim, but they gave us the rest. So, like,
jeez,
yeah, it was pretty cool.
If you like books, that's a score.
Yep, it was a score.
I mean, yeah, I would have done the same if they gave away like beers or cigars or food or something like that. You know?
They did have a, I forget, I didn't know, but they had a they had a pipe sharing, like you could bring your pipe and they had tobacco that you could smoke
your
pipe with people. And I,
you should have brought yours.
I didn't know, or else I would have.
Dang.
So yeah.
Well, next time.
And they were giving away beer. It was all free beer. So like they probably give away more stuff than And we got a cup and a couple books. So we got a beer, like a pint glass. And so I got the discount because I got the early, like the early notification from Trip because I'm on his mailing list. And they probably spent more money than I spent on the actual camp. Wow. On me. So like I drank way more beer than I paid to go to the conference.
Like, that's awesome. That's
plus plus my worth. Dinner, you know.
Yeah. So, that's how you get your money's worth, man.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So it's fun.
Yep. And so one of those topics that they brought was bad theology.
Yeah, in the context of like the first person that spoke about it was you want to check in with you? Like, well, you did your life update, but I mean, like, what do you got going on?
Yeah, not much, man. Just, you know, just working, just hanging. We got to see you guys yesterday, which was really fun. Halloween's coming up. So we're just kind of getting ready for that. You know, there's like some different places that do like trunk or treats. So we're going to probably hit some of those up. I think trunk or treats are a lot better than door to door.
Okay. I think.
So here's the reason. So typically with trunk or treats, they're associated with some sort of a church or some sort of a business. The likelihood of them sneaking in drugs or something would be, I think, a lot less prevalent because when you go door to door, I mean, you're really, there's no backing behind other than that person maybe like getting in trouble with the police or something if they could prove it. But I think if you're representing a business or a church, you're probably less likely to do something dangerous to kids.
Yeah. I just like how often have you ever seen that happen? I'm not saying it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
How often have you ever seen that happen?
Yeah. I don't know why the fear is so much higher this year too. I don't know.
It's a urban legend that started like a few decades ago.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. So we go door to door because we have like, we see it as an opportunity to like meet our neighbors and like, you know, and then we check the candy, not that, because we're going to go downtown. We're going to do the downtown trick or treat too. But like we check the candy anyway.
Right.
And then we take what we want as tax.
Right.
And then, and then let them pick. And then we let them pick like, I don't know, like 20 pieces that they're going to put away. And then we take all the rest and hand it back out at the door. So, so we don't, we don't even let them keep all of it anyway. And this year, I'm going to sit in the, like, I'm going to put the screen, like the projector onto the garage and like hand out hot cocoa or cider or something like that to our neighbors as they come by so they can like sit and watch Hocus Pocus if they want to, or get a cup of hot cocoa, probably cider. I don't know which one would be easier, but
yeah.
So you guys are going to do a trunk or treat?
I think so. Also, like, here's the thing is that, like, literally, it's like you get your candy and then 1 foot later you get another candy and 1 foot later you get another candy versus having to, like...
And then you go home.
Yeah. And then having to go to this door. Oh, no one's home. This door. Like, oh, like, right. It just has a bucket right there, you know? Also, some people get really, really into Halloween. I have to tell you. It's
scary. There are some scary...
I tell you, I truly, personally hate Halloween. I just do. Like, oh, yeah. I don't like to be scared because I like to throw punches when I get scared and things. I don't like the things jumping out of you. I don't like the fact that, like... So, like, when I think of every other holiday...
So, you're not a haunted house guy.
No. I've gotten kicked out of a couple of them because of fighting the characters and that sort of thing.
Yeah,
not good.
They're not allowed to touch you, Justin.
Yeah, I know, but I'm allowed to touch them until they kick me out, you know, like, but the thing is that when I think of like Thanksgiving and I think of Christmas, I think of New Year's, Valentine's Day, St. Patrick's Day, 4th of July, it's festive. It's about family. It's fun. It's party. It's glitz and glamour, you know, and then you get to Halloween and it's like zombies and death and vampires and clowns. And I'm like, It just doesn't match any of the other holidays
Yeah.
at all. You know, it just doesn't. And it, like, I'm like, I don't know. There's just, I'm just like, it's just, I don't like it. You know, like, I don't like the blood and the guts and the
Yeah, that's
scary.
fair.
And so trunk or treats, they're not scary. No one's dressed up as any kind of crazy characters. And you get more candy, you know, pretty much. You just get, you, and it's so much quicker. And yeah, I don't know.
And Hensley's five, so she's, less less energy to be able to walk around the entire neighborhood.
Right. And also, like, I mean, if Halloween's going to be anything like it was today, man, it was cold today.
Yeah.
At least in Twin, it was. It was cold. Like, we put the heater on for the first time, you know?
Yeah, we had it on last night. It was
Yeah.
freeze warning.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, you combine that with, you know, trying to, like, your little 5-year-old walking around when it's cold outside. You know.
Well, I grew up in Alaska, so by Halloween,
Oh
it was already freezing. So.
yeah. Yeah. Nobody would actually show their costumes because they were under jackets the whole
Right,
time.
yeah, like you were all covered up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So anyway, so yeah, Halloween's coming up, and yeah, that's pretty much really it. I mean, there's not much going on other than just still in the gym and still working out and, you know, doing my thing. So, yeah.
Cool. So let's talk about theology.
Yeah.
Justin, what do you know about theology?
Well, I know theology is the study of God. And I know that there are people who consider themselves the quarterbacks of theology. They know the answers, they know it's right, and they toss it into the congregation as gospel. And
And your only job is to catch it.
yeah, and but for us, we've decided to be folding chair theologians, a lot less glamorous, a lot less lower pay for sure.
Significantly lower pay.
But I would say maybe a little bit more accurate. So I don't
I would
know.
say a little bit more practical in the ability to so there's this at the camp, there's this one of the speakers was Dr. Leah Robinson. She's the associate professor of religion at Pfeiffer University. And so super smart lady. Also worked at, I think got her PhD and taught at University of Edinburgh. So super jealous. Again, like every
Yeah.
time that they would be like, ah, I know Trip from working it. I was just like,
Yeah.
angry.
Oh,
But like she's got her PhD in practical theology. And so practical theology in and of itself, I'm just going to read a definition real quick. Practical theology is an academic discipline that examines and reflects on religious practices in order to understand the theology enacted in those practices and in order to consider how theological theory and theological practices can be more fully aligned, changed, or improved. Essentially, like it's how you do theology. Practical theology is like theology as an academic tool, but presented, like studied and presented in a way that allows your theological practice and your theological theory to be aligned and joined together, right? And so like we all have a theology, like we all have an understanding of God, like a way that we see God. We've all gotten it from somewhere, like it's come from somewhere. We didn't develop, right?
Yeah.
And so most of the time, especially if you're like in cultural Christianity, like I grew up when I was growing up, like if you were an American, you were a Christian. Like that was just like I'm a Christian because I'm an American. Like
Right.
okay.
Yeah.
And then like you get in the military, like I was in the military, and there's no atheists in the foxhole. I was like, for one, I don't remember the last time we fought in a foxhole, but okay.
Yeah, right.
But for two, not that we didn't train in foxholes. I've sat in so many foxholes, foxholes. And that's not to say that we didn't use them to defend bases and like port operating bases and like that kind of stuff. They did. But it's not like foxhole fighting like you think when you think about like World War II and like the trench warfare and like Vietnam and stuff like that. It's not the same thing.
Yeah.
But the point is like everybody's a Christian, right? Everyone's a Christian. And it doesn't matter like what your understanding and theory of God is. Just that you're a Christian, and that means that you're a good American. And then whatever theology based on the church that you go to is built out of that. So like you said, you grew up in a pretty strict Christian home. And so like the way that you understood God was painted by that, right? Like I remember like when we pretty first much. Met, just you telling stories about like when you and Jessica met, like the way that you had understood God and you'd been in college for a little bit. So like there was this, I don't know, would you say rebellious period?
Oh yeah.
But like, what was your thought? Like, did you ever think about theology growing, like as you became a young adult and into college, did you ever think about like what that actually meant?
Yeah, it's interesting because I was being a rebel by doing all these bad things, partying, doing all those stupid things that you do in college. But I also was attending the Nazarene church that was like not too far away from the college. And it actually helped start the college ministry at that, you know, because we had a bunch of college kids at the church, but we had nowhere to like hang out and gather and that sort of thing. So I was playing drums. I was doing the college ministry. And then outside of that, I was like partying and hanging out with girls and doing stupid stuff late at night. Like, and so it was this really weird thing where it was like, well, I'm like half good. Like God still is going to love me, you know, cause I'm going to church and I'm
helped set up the thing.
I helped set up the college ministry. And we used to play basketball after the college ministry. And they used to call me they call me the J train because I would go hard in the paint there, you know, and they couldn't stop me. I was just this big monstrous, you know, kid. But then like, you know, I'd go and, you know, go drink at a party somewhere, you know? So it was just really weird how like my, you know, I was telling my parents, oh yeah, I'm going to church and I'm hanging out with this small group and we're doing the college ministry. But then on the other side of it, I was like partying and drinking, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So it was like, oh, I'm still good. Like, I'm doing good things. So God's got to be happy about that, you know?
Right. Like you were able to at least somehow justify it in your head. Do you think that was because the understanding of God that you received, like, do you think that your rebellion was set or like was prompted by like the strict understanding of God that you were given, or like, what were you rebelling against?
Yeah. So like, even as like a 17, 18 year old in high school as a senior, my bedtime was still like 9 a.m. or 9 p.m. You know what I'm saying? Like it was still, all right, it's 8:30, start brushing your teeth, go get, you know, and I'm like the 17, 18 year old kid, like, mom, I want to go hang out with my friends or whatever. And they'd be like, nope. And, you know, once it's dark, it's the devil's playground, you know, kind of thing. And so
even like your curfew was built out of this theological idea, right?
It's that whole like, what's that saying? Don't drink or chew or hang out with girls that do kind of thing.
Don't drink or chew or run with girls that do.
Yeah. And so it's that whole concept of like, once it gets dark, nothing good happens after midnight, or, you know, nothing good happens after the sun goes down. And so there's nothing I could possibly be doing unless it was the youth group, right? Like
Right.
if Wednesday night youth group went until 8:30 and we all went to go get Sonic milkshakes afterward, but then I went home. My parents were cool with that. Like they were cool with that. But if it was like, hey, me and my friends are gonna go walk around, nope. Like, can't do that, you know? And
Right.
so even as a man, essentially, I still had a curfew of 9 p.m., you know, kind of thing.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mine was kind of the same way. I would say my parents were pretty strict like that too. And it was built out of like the theology that we were being taught in church was that we were bad and that we needed that there was no good in us without Jesus and that we weren't capable of anything good. And like my practice theology at home was built out of that idea. And so like discipline was developed around there, rules were developed around there. To the point to where when I did get freedom, I was just like, nope, don't care about that. Like,
Right.
I'm gonna go do what I want.
Yeah.
And I did. And I thought that because of the way that I understood, it was very, ironically, it's very Catholic in the understand, like Catholic confessional in the understanding that I had for like my ability to like walk away, come back and repent, walk away, come back and repent. Like the way that I was
Right.
taught, my like the way that I was taught to understand God and my interaction with him, really took on this like this practice theology that was like my understanding of God is I can kind of do what I want and he has grace for me and he'll forgive me. And so there was no like motivation to like live a Christ-like life, you know?
Yeah. Daniel Tosh says something like that. I've always, you know, Daniel Tosh
Yeah,
is
I
the
know he is. What's he
comedian.
say?
He said this one thing and it stuck with me my whole life. He's like, isn't the point? He's like, all you gotta do is live the life that you want to live, and then right before you die, all you gotta say is those little words, and then you go to heaven. He's like, that's the whole point of it, right? And like, and it's kind of that whole thing where he's like, and comedians are funny this way
Right.
because comedians say these really funny things, but then like sometimes like it's rooted in what they grew up
Well,
with, you know?
yeah, I mean, like it is for sure, like, you know, I mean, they're speaking truth about something that to a degree that's ridiculous, right? Like that's the whole point is like it's funny because it's true, but in the most ridiculous way. And because obviously,
Yeah.
like you can't know when you're gonna die, you know, you can't know that you're gonna be walking across the street and get hit by a bus and have time to say, you know. While
Yeah.
you're smoking crack after you just left the hooker house, like
Right.
you know what I'm saying? Like you can't
Yeah.
know, like you can't live that way and just assume like I'm gonna know when death is coming and I'll just be able to. So that's ridiculous,
Right.
but that's the like that's how it's presented on a kind of practical level.
Yeah.
You know, unless you're like Calvinist, and then it's just like, yeah, but if you walked away, you were never saved. You
Yeah,
know, like you weren't
right.
elect, you weren't chosen. Yeah, but what if I come back? Well, then God ordained that. Like God knew that that was going to happen.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when I say so, Leah, Dr. Robinson, talks about practical theology, and her thing is just that all theology is practical. Like all practical theology is. In a nutshell, is the point that all theology is practical. Like we are all doing theology all the time. And she makes the argument that like if you are doing like if you're doing systematic theology or philosophical theology, then you're just abstracting theology beyond your ability to actually believe what it is or practice it. And so she very outwardly does not like systematic theology. She thinks it's silly to try and systematize or create a system of theology. And I just had a conversation with guys last Friday morning where we had this conversation that was just like really trying to systematize theology, like create a system of theology. All it does is create more issues. Like all it does is create more questions that you have to answer in a way that may not be livable. And it abstracts it to the point where it's just like, well, now I can't even do this thing. Like, it's so high end and abstract that I don't even know what it looks like to live out this thing. Yeah. And so her thing is just like, if you think that you're doing systematic theology, you're actually doing theology, but you've created an abstraction of theology that you can't actually perform. Like, it's not performable. So her thing is like, theology is practical in and of itself. Like, we are all doing theology. If we're Christian, like if we're religious, we're all doing theology. Like, we are all practicing and playing out what we believe about God. Like, our practice of theology is a reflection of our theory of theology and what we believe to be true about theology. Right. And so if I say bad theology, what do you think? Like, what comes to mind? Like, where's your thought go?
When I think of bad theology, what I think is like a motivational kind of theology, like either motivating people to do a certain, like, so for instance, like a church I went to, for instance, big church. I mean, it's like a 5,000 person big church in Idaho. And we went there for a while we were kind of in between churches. We were there for probably 6 months or something like that, 8 months. And we weren't involved or anything. We were like, we're going to sit in the back and not meet a single person. Like, we were kind of at that point right there.
Right.
And I remember and I'm telling you how this church is a big church. Mm-hmm. If I told you the name of it, you'd know it.
Right. I think I already know which one you're talking about.
Okay. And we sat there and I remember them saying, they say, we have a goal of building this other wing of the church. It's going to be $13 million. And then we want to build this other wing to this church. And I remember them being like, we pass this card around, take it home, pray about it. And what we want you to do is put on the amount of tithe that you're going to be doing over the next 12 months. And you're going to sign this contract. It's a contract that you believe that God is going to do amazing things through this church. And then we will, if you get off track or whatever, we'll have the ability to send you text reminders and blah, 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 like to help you get back on track to hitting your goal. Cause God loves winners, you know, like things like that. Right. And I remember sitting there and now here's the thing is, from what I remember, there it was going to be like upgraded offices for the staff and a lounge area and a thing and a whatever. And, you know, it's like all this kind of stuff. And I'm telling you that this building is a huge building already. Like, it's a giant building. Like, and so the next 12 months of sermons, basically they just said, for the next year, we're going to be talking about money. We're going to be talking about how to win with money, how to be victorious with money, how money changes the outlook of your life. And I just was like, wow. And they were eating it up. You know what I'm saying? The whole church is clapping and standing, and there's roaring, like, you know, cheering and that sort of thing. And I just was like, dude, like, wasn't this enough? Like, this giant building with all these people, like, isn't that enough? Like, but it just wasn't. It wasn't enough because they had this whole new vision and that sort of thing. And so here's the thing is, it's cool to have vision. It's cool to have, like, you know, programs, that sort of thing. But I just thought, man, like, just such an interesting way to take, you know, instead of like theology that's going to help the poor and the widowed and the orphan and that sort of thing, the theology that's being taught is go big or go home, right? That's kind of that whole thing. And so it's just very interesting how, like, when I think of bad theology, I kind of just think of that example, but I think of other examples. Where I feel like I sit and I listen to something, and you know how you get that like gross feeling, you know?
Yep, I get it a lot lately.
Yeah, it's that gross feeling where, like, I don't like that. Like, that doesn't sound healthy. But it's only be coming out of that where I finally go, oh, that is not healthy. I think even my wife had shared that someone preached about self-care is selfish. Why would you self-care? It's all
Well,
about
recently, yeah,
people. You
she
know what I'm
mentioned
saying?
that the other day.
And I haven't listened to that sermon necessarily, but I could totally see something like that, like if someone's saying that because it, and I'm like, man, that feels kind of ouchy a little bit. Like, I don't know if that's right, you know?
Right.
So that's what I think about when I
Well,
think
in
about
my
God
like
judging.
in that, my very first question in that thing that you mentioned that Jessica had mentioned about like self-care and selfish, then how do you love your neighbor as yourself? You know what I'm saying? Like, how do you even know what that looks
100%.
like? Like, if it's selfish to love yourself and to care for yourself and to perform self-care, how do you know what it looks like to love your neighbor? Because that's the measure that Jesus gives. You know, that's the measure of the law. Love your neighbor as you love yourself. Like,
Totally.
you would, Paul, like, you would not like, he's talking about husbands love your wives the way that you love your own body. Like, you wash your body and you feed your body and you take care of your body. Literally talking about self-care, literally those words. And then someone stands on stage and is just like, I would never do that. I would never care for myself. Like, that's selfish.
Sabbaticals. What are you talking about?
I don't understand, like, and so like when I ask, so what do you think bad theology, like when you hear bad theology, like what comes to mind? And if that's the thing that comes to mind, then you got it right. Like, then you yes, that's poor theology, because that's like literally not grounded in anything that's helpful, right? And so contrast that to good theology. What's good theology? Because let's be honest, we're making some like legitimate judgment calls here as we talk about like what is good and what is bad theology. And that can rub people the wrong way potentially, where it's just like, why do you get to make a judgment call about what good theology is versus bad theology, right?
Well, and I think when I think of good theology, the main thing that comes to my mind is what Jesus said for the Sermon on the Mount. I feel like if there was an example of what good theology is it's that whole speech. And but like what I love about, you know, when like in a business speech or like a proposal, you start with this like beginning idea. And then you do this whole thing through the middle, but then the end somehow wraps up the whole thing to what you said in the beginning. I feel
Tell them
like
what you're going
that's
to
what,
tell them, and then tell them what you told them.
And I feel like Jesus did that. I feel like Jesus was like, the kingdom of heaven is for the people you don't think it's probably going to be for, but that's who it is. And then he talks, then through that whole thing, he talks about, like you said, like loving your neighbor, not worrying about
Why that's
yourself.
true, right?
And then he wraps the whole thing up, essentially saying, people are going to come to me and they're going to be like, but we did all these hungry. When were you thirsty? Like, we cast out demons. And he said, we didn't do it for the least of these. And he, in the very beginning of that speech, it was all about the least of these is who the heavens would be. So even, I feel like even Jesus does this amazing sermon that is completely congruent with every thought through the whole thing, and it tied all in together at the very end, and like literally it was all about, the whole thing was all about loving people and like putting people above yourself and saying things like, I would never do self-care, I would never take a vacation because all I do is work. And I'm like, all you do is not work. I guarantee it. Like, if I look at your Instagram and your Facebook, you guys were on the lake this weekend with your boat. You know, like, what do you mean you don't, you know? And so it's just really interesting how, like, they'll say things like that. But what's the point of it?
Well,
What's the
what they
point of you
mean
saying that?
is they love what they do so much that they're never working a day in their life. You know,
Which
because when
I
you
don't
love
know
what you
about that.
do, you'll never work a day in your life.
You know, it's really funny. I don't think that's ever true. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know, because like even like you do counseling. You probably love doing counseling, but there's times where you're like, man, counseling's hard. Like, you know, like,
And there are times that I'm just like, man, I'd like not to do this forever.
yeah, exactly. But you know, it's like Same thing with me with like claims. It's like I don't necessarily love claims, but I love the fact that I know what I'm doing. Like, and I don't have some supervisor or manager breathing down my neck constantly saying, do it faster, do it more, save more money, you know, like and so yeah, anyway, it's really funny. But yeah, so I just think good theology looks like, if it looks like the Sermon on the Mount, then it's good theology. If it doesn't look like the Sermon on the Mount, then it would be bad theology, I think.
Yeah, it's a good measure. I think that's a good measure. And so I'm going to read what Dr. Robinson wraps up in bad theology criteria, like what she provides as criteria for bad theology.
Yeah, cool.
And so she says bad theology limits flourishing of humans, creates oppression. Is non-reflective, like it doesn't allow for reflection and challenge, right? Like you can't ref like you can't look at the bad theology that's being taught, reflect on it, and like offer differing views, right? It creates an us versus them mentality. It is isolated and isolating, and does not involve justice or equality. That is bad theology. So like that's her criteria for like if you're trying to measure bad theology, that is the criteria.
What's interesting about that is it's a lot of your perception of that thing, right? And so, because I bet you, if you had examples and you went to your church, your pastor, and said, the four of the 10 of these things I would identify here at this church, they would say, oh, you're just interpreting it wrong.
Right, that you're interpreting it wrong. That's your perception. So, and I'm aware of the fact that like that it can seem subjective,
I do like it. I mean, I do like it for
right?
sure.
Like, no, yeah, I do too. But like, I'm aware that it can seem subjective in the sense that like, let's take wives submit to your husband. Right, like
Right.
let's take that passage of scripture, in Ephesians 5:22, wives submit to your husbands. If you look at it from a bad theology criteria, that potentially creates a system of oppression, right? That it creates potentially limits the flourishing of the wife, potentially, is not like could be considered as a system that creates non-equality between husband and wife, right? And so like just those three right off the bat like make it seem like it's bad theology to understand, and we've talked about it before, but complementarianism as a good theology criteria, like as a good theology. But that's where like when we when I mentioned earlier like if you're trying to create a system of theology and you take scripture and you're like, oh, this fits into this part of the system, and this is how we're going to understand, submission within the marital structure, it forces you to create other, like to explain other things and to create other systems and to like uphold things like patriarchy. Like, I don't care what you say, it is well grounded in history and research. There's documentation that says complementarianism used to be called biblical patriarchy. And they just changed the name when they started to realize that biblical patriarchy sounded bad. And so they reached into the definition of egalitarian and pulled complementarianism out of that, because there is a part in the I don't remember it word for word, but in the definition for egalitarianism, like what explains it, there is a part that says each role, like each person complements the other within the relationship. And so they took complementarianism and made it into this like broader, essentially just rebranded biblical patriarchy. And the only reason that you do that is because there's an issue with it. There's a problem with it. You know what I'm saying? So like, in order right. for wives submit to your husbands to work the way that they're defining it in their theology, in their systematic theology is, well, what is this? Oh, it's biblical patriarchy. Like, it's patriarchy. Well, now you're upholding a system that is inherently oppressive. That is actually like, if you take patriarchy, like all the way back to where it began, it's part of the curse. Like, it's not an upholding of like the way that God desired it. You see it first take hold in Genesis 3 after the fall. And so in systematic theology, when it's just an abstraction that you don't have to perform, and you're just coming up with a philosophy of theology or a system of theology, you can make those work. Like, you'll patriarchy does involve submission, women can't teach, and then all these things that ignore other passages of the Bible. Like, it just straight up ignores other passages of the Bible. And then when you try and implement them in a practical way that's healthy and a reflection of good theology, it starts to fall apart. Like, it starts to, I was listening to a podcast the other day, and they were talking about how we have this idea that like divorce within Christianity is 50% the same as the like secular, you know, quote unquote secular world. And they said, actually, what's more true, like the number that's more accurate is that people who are nominally Christian, and the podcast host said people that would go to church occasionally, but would that you'd find driving around with flags in the back of their truck, wearing yeah. red hats, nominal Christians are actually 20 to 30% more likely to divorce than people who don't identify as Christian at all. Like, that's where the system falls apart, is you've created a system that is difficult to live out.
Right.
And now it becomes harmful, and it doesn't create flourishing, and it doesn't reflect the things that Jesus tries to implement in the Sermon on the Mount, right? Like, when he says, hey, this is what it looks like to be within the kingdom. And then you're like, yeah, but I'm going to treat my wife this specific way, and women can't teach. And like, whoa, you're missing it. Like, you're missing the kingdom. Like, you're missing, like, how does that help you? How are you creating, how are you putting limits on what it looks like for a woman to flourish in her gifting? That's not flourishing. Like, that's not flourishing. How are you putting limits on, slavery and abolition? And like, they use the Bible to support slavery back in the, and segregation back in the, antebellum times. And when chattel slavery was, they used the Bible, and they were creating systems of oppression. And so they were doing theology. They were just doing bad theology, right?
Yeah.
And good theology then is the opposite of those things. It's reflective of like your connection with other people, and it and how the theology that you're practicing impacts other people. It's it enhances the flourishing of other humans. It's non-oppressive and actually undoes oppression. Not just is not oppressive, but actually undoes oppression. It creates a unity of body and an inclusivity within the kingdom. Like, I'm going to invite you in because I see your humanity, and I recognize you as an image bearer, right? It does not isolate. In fact, it like puts you in the midst of people that's in the world but not of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it practices and looks for justice and equality within the human system, right?
Yeah.
So what does that mean for today? Like, where do we see bad theology happening today?
Everywhere.
Yeah, like so many places. But I think we just did a three-part series on like where we see bad theology, right? Yeah. Like, Christian nationalism is bad theology in action. Like, it's 100% bad theology in action. I would say any theology that you have that you use, or that you use to cover up your political agenda, like to mask your political agenda in, that's bad theology. Like, that's not good theology. So, you know, there's a lot of talk right now about like one, what do they call it? Single issue voters, or like where like the thing, like you'll vote straight down the Republican ticket because the most important thing is pro-life. Like, I don't care about anything else. I'm a single issue voter. I'm going to vote just pro-life, right? And that's hugely popular. Like, that started back in the 80s, where all of a sudden pro-life becomes the most important thing, to the point where you will reject all other things that look like the kingdom. And not only do you dislike liberal agenda, you actually demonize anybody who is not in your party, and that's an us versus them, and you wrap it up in theology, right? You wrap it up in Christian language and Christian speak, and that creates an us versus them. It's isolationist. Like, it doesn't seek justice or equality. January 6th was a perfect example of bad theology in action, right? That's bad practical theology. And it just hurts people. Like, it just hurts people. And I think you said it well, where it's just like, good theology looks like the kingdom. Like, where am I helping humans flourish? Like, where am I trying to undo oppression? Where am I trying to be reflective in the way that I interact with people and garner their goodwill, you know, live at peace with people as long as it depends on me, which is in the Bible, it's scripture. Create a community of inclusivity that's just like, you're welcome here. Like, I recognize your humanity and your divinity and your image bearing, and you're welcome here. So yeah, that's my rant.
No, that's really good. You know, the more and more I think about it, I think I want to teach my little one. I have one child. I was going to say children, but one child.
Someday.
Yeah. You know, I just want to like teach my little one. I've always thought, like, I gotta know the Bible. Like, I gotta know the ins and outs. Like, I gotta know the theology. Like, I gotta know the Levitical law. I need to know what do they call that when it's like the first thing said in the Bible? They call it what's that called?
What are you talking about?
You know, like a first thought, it comes in the Bible through Genesis. They call that single thought the something.
Genesis? I don't know.
Yeah, I try to remember.
But you'll say it and I'll be like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I've heard that.
It's like one of those things where they're like, I can't remember. But they're just like, oh, this is the first time in the Bible this idea is mentioned. And there's a specific name for it. But anyway, I just thought I needed to know, you know, all of those things in order to like show my little one, like, yeah, daddy knows the Bible and I'm going to teach you the Bible and that sort of thing. And now I'm realizing, I think, is it's not about that. Like, it really is not really about that. It's really cool that all those things are in the Bible. Like, it's like if you wanted to dig into a thought, it's really awesome that the Bible has the ability to go full circle on that one thought. But the main thing I think I want to teach my little one is the Sermon on the Mount. Like, I think that's the most important part of the Bible, because it links the entire Bible together in that one sermon. It's the one message that Jesus had. It's the one thing that like that totally changed the way that people viewed God the Father, as far as being this like angry, you know, guy upstairs kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm like, if my little one just gets the Sermon on the Mount correct, I don't know if there's really much else that she'll have to know more of. Like, if she wants to know more, then obviously, like, I'm welcome. I'm totally excited for that conversation. But if I could just teach just the one thing in the Bible to her, that would be it. And like, right. And like, literally that one thing, if she gets that down, carries over to the next world and life that Jesus has for us, you know, like as far as being a kingdom citizen. You know, so I don't know, I think it's just really interesting how, like, I think about it that way, where I'm like, if I want to teach a good theology, I really should teach her what Jesus's message was.
Right.
That's good theology.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amen. That's same.
Yeah.
And I mean, you already said it, but like, at the end of the day, like, how am I like inviting my kid into, like, how am I inviting my kid to see the Sermon on the Mount? And not just see the Sermon on the Mount, like, how am I inviting them to see the Sermon on the Mount? How am I inviting them to see it played out and like practice it? Right.
Right. Yeah. And I am super proud of my little one. We just had our very first parent teacher conference as parents. We've never done it before, you know? And there's 24 kids in her class, I think. And they only elected two kids in her whole class to win the KIND award. And she was one of the two that won it. And like, we get these little things that says, I caught you. And it's like these different things, like being nice, being helpful, being whatever. And she gets this, I caught you being kind, like weekly. And so I know that she's very kind, and she's very, and that is just a huge step. Like,
that's pretty cool.
It is really cool, because it's like, I hope that I was an instrument of that, because sometimes what she sees at home is not the perfect, fun-loving dad all the time. You know, sometimes it's the stressed out, or the frustrated, or the sometimes they're yelling at each other. You know, and I hate that, but it's like, I hope that she knows that, like, to be kind is that's how Jesus was. Jesus was kind, you know?
Yep.
So. Yep.
And, you know, like, she gets that because you got, you know, because of what you guys are like, she didn't just pick it. Like, she didn't just figure it out. You know, she's smart, but she didn't just figure it out. She picked it up. Like, she caught what you know, you're the quarterback, and you
yeah, exactly.
And you toss it to her, and she caught it.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, okay. So that's good and bad theology. I don't know if that was helpful for people, but like,
you should post those ten things.
Yeah,
I think, you know, I almost envision, like, you know, wives submit to your husband, and then like, I wish people could like choose which one they think would be, is this good theology or bad theology based off of this criteria?
Right.
And like, I just wonder what people would say.
But that's the thing too, is just like, people are going to be like, you know, like, they'll see what they want to see in it because of what they were taught. Right.
Yeah.
Like, and it'd probably be a good exercise, but like, people are going to see what they want to see in it because of what they've been taught. And it's really hard to like, disentangle yourself from that without like having to unravel the whole thing.
Someday when you have your big conference that you do, it'd be cool to have something like that.
That's gonna happen.
Yeah, it'll happen. You know, like, you know, the Scantrons. Remember Scantrons? You bubble the bubble out.
Yeah.
I almost would like, you can almost pass that out to everybody and then be anonymous and then plug it into a, or at this point there's gonna be an app. You know, like an app for it. Yeah.
Just and then download the app.
And it'd be cool to see where the room is and then be able to talk to that point of like some different things in the Bible when it comes to that.
Like, everybody who picked this, go to this side of the room. They're the bad theology side.
Weird. All the men over here and all the women are over here. That's weird. So weird.
What? Anyway. Cool. Okay. That's it.
Cool. Awesome. Well, I really enjoyed this. You know, I really enjoy those 10 bullet points. I would love to have.
I'll post them.
Yeah, definitely post them, because that's really cool. But cool. All right. Well, that is our episode on theology here on the Theology Podcast, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, definitely make sure you, you know, give us a comment, start it up, like it up, buy versus book, whatever you got to do.
Buy my book. Buy my book.
Yeah.
I have a whole bunch of them.
Yeah, for sure.
They're still on Amazon. Go order it at a local bookstore. You can go to a local bookstore. I would encourage you to do that. Don't buy it off Amazon. Go to a local bookstore, order it. They'll order it for you.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Very good. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Keep on following and unfolding God's word each and every day. We'll see you next time on the podcast.
Cool.
Peace out.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Fold and Share Theology. You can follow Bruce on multiple social media platforms at bpags2, as well as Justin Mercier on Instagram at justinmercier13. Additionally, you can check us out on Facebook and Instagram at Fold and Share Theology. Until then, keep unfolding God's word each and every day.